Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Gustavus special meeting, City Council special meeting, work session for the presentation about the Local Boundary Commission and the Hoonah Borough petition. In City Hall, we have City Clerk Lisa Barker. I'm Shelley Owens, the mayor. We have Mike Taylor, former mayor, council members Rachel Patrick and Kyle Bishop, and the city administrator, Kathy Leary. And joining us for the presentation is Jedediah Smith, local government specialist with the Local Boundary Commission, sponsored by the State Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. The presentation, he'll describe to us the purpose of the presentation, but it will be on process and timing of borough formation, followed by questions from the audience. He won't be accepting comments at this time, and we will send out an announcement after the meeting about how you can submit public comments. Okay, Jed, it's up to you. You've got it.
Thank you very much, Mayor Owens, and thank you all for your time tonight. As was stated, my name is Jedediah Smith. I am staff to the Local Boundary Commission, and I am here to share with you all tonight some information about the Hoonah Borough Incorporation petition that our office received and accepted for filing on November the 27th. Let me just see if I can share my screen. It looks like I can. Stand by. Can you all see that?
We do.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Great. Well, we're all getting so better at Zoom. It's amazing. Not something I thought I would be getting better at 4 years ago, but here we are. Okay. Well, thank you all for taking the time this evening. I'm going to talk a little bit about what the Local Boundary Commission is and what my role as staff is, the different types of boroughs and their duties, and then dive right into the borough incorporation standards that the Local Boundary Commission staff and the commission themselves will use to evaluate the petition that we have received. These decisions are not made in a vacuum. There are actually standards that we will use to determine whether this petition should be adopted or not. And then I'll go into a little bit of the petition process, the kind of the timeline and the schedule that we are looking at, and then provide you all with information on how you can submit your comments. So I did email this presentation out to Mayor Owens and your city administrator earlier today, and welcome them to share that information for you all, because I think that there is going to be a lot of information in this presentation, and it'll be helpful for you to go back and review that as you begin to put your comments together. So, and I'm happy to take questions as we go through this presentation, but feel free just to kind of stop me. I'll try to take pauses throughout just to see if there are questions along the way. So what is the Local Boundary Commission? It is an autonomous and independent commission created by Alaska's Constitution. The idea is to objectively consider these proposed municipal boundary changes, taking into account not just the needs of the locality, but also the needs of the state. And the Alaska Supreme Court has affirmed that principle, that it isn't always, these types of boundary changes aren't always best made at the local level. The interests of the state should at some times be taken into account. And I'll get into a little bit more of an explanation of how that can work a little bit later. The Local Boundary Commission is listed in statute as five members. It's made up of five members. They are all appointed by the governor. They are represent the four judicial districts in Alaska. And there is one member who is appointed at large and serves as the chair. Currently, we have John Harrington from Ketchikan. We have Clayton Trotter from Eagle River. We have Eli Cyrus from Kiana, the kind of up near the Kotzebue region. We have Clay Walker from the Denali Borough, and kind of represents the interior region. And then Larry Wood serves as the chair of the commission. John Harrington has the longest tenure on the commission. He's served for a little over 10 years. Most of the other commissioners, though, are relatively new and have all been appointed by this governor. What my role as department staff primarily is to serve as an advisor to the commission. I'm not to act in an advocacy capacity for a petitioner or any other member of the public. Subsection B kind of discusses the fact that LBC staff should not serve as a petitioner in the event that a petition is initiated by someone else within the department. I won't necessarily go too into that right now, but subsection C does provide that staff ensure that the commission is fully and accurately informed, providing the commission new or additional information that supplements, questions, or refutes information provided by or a position taken by the petitioner, any of the respondents, or other persons, meaning members of the public. And I have said this on a number of occasions. This petition will not be rubber stamped. We do a deeper dive into the information that was presented to us. And I encourage you all to submit any information that you think would be relevant to considering this petition that may not have been provided by the petitioner. As I have said, I don't know what I don't know. And I certainly don't live in Southeast Alaska or in your community or in Hoonah. And there is a lot I don't know about that region. So, please, please be thoughtful and gracious in your comments, but also feel free to provide information that you think will be useful in providing context to this petition. So a little bit about borough types. Hoonah is proposing to incorporate as a home rule borough. A home rule borough means that the power is derived from the charter as opposed to a general law borough, and those powers are prescribed in state statute. Many of you all are familiar with these various types of boroughs. We do have first class boroughs and second class boroughs as general law, but some of the non-unified home rule boroughs that you may be familiar with. And again, Hoonah is proposing to form a non-unified home rule borough. But similarly to City and Borough of Yakutat, the Denali Borough, Haynes Borough, Lake and Peninsula Borough, non-unified home rule borough really means that although the city of Hoonah would be dissolved if this petition's approved, other municipalities could exist within the borough boundaries. Right now, currently under this proposed petition, the city of Hoonah is the only existing municipality within those boundaries. And like I said, they are proposing to dissolve the city and create a service area around that. But that this petition would not preclude, for example, the later incorporation of the, for example, Elfin Cove, if Elfin Cove decided to incorporate in the future. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the borough incorporation standards and how we will use those to evaluate this petition, starting with the Alaska Constitution and how that informs state statute, and then how state statute is more specified by the Alaska Administrative Code. And think of the standards in the Administrative Code as really kind of where the rubber meets the road, but all three tiers of these standards are very important. So starting with Alaska's constitution, Article 10, Section 3 states that the entire state shall be divided into boroughs, both organized or unorganized. Let's see if I can minimize that. They shall be established in a manner and according to standards provided by law. And those standards shall include population, geography, economy, transportation, and other factors. Each borough shall embrace an area and population with a common interest to the maximum degree possible. And the legislature shall classify boroughs and prescribe their powers and functions, as I mentioned, general law boroughs versus home rule boroughs. Methods by which boroughs may be organized, incorporated, merged, consolidated, reclassified, or dissolved shall be prescribed by law. And that's what leads us into the standards that we have. Alaska Statute Title 29 specifies incorporation. An area that meets the following standards may incorporate as a home rule, first class, or second class borough, or as a unified municipality. First of all, the population of an area is interrelated and integrated as to its social, cultural, and economic activities, and is large and stable enough to support borough government. Number two, the boundaries of the proposed borough or unified municipality conform generally to the natural geography and include all areas necessary for full development of municipal services. Number three, the economy of the area includes the human and financial resources capable of providing municipal services. Evaluation of an area's economy includes land use, property values, total economic base, total personal income, resources and commercial development, anticipated functions, expenses, and income of the proposed borough or unified municipality. And number four, land, water, and air transportation facilities allow the communication and exchange necessary for the development of integrated borough government. So that's a good transition into what the standards in the administrative code state, and the standards have been adopted by the Local Boundary Commission over the years. They were adopted and have continued to be refined. But the standards used to evaluate a borough incorporation petition start with 3AAC 110.045, and we're going to look at order community of interests. On a regional scale suitable for borough government, the social, cultural, and economic characteristics and activities of the people in a proposed borough must be interrelated and integrated in accordance with Title 29 and with Article 10, Section 3 of the Constitution. The Commission may consider the following factors. Number one, the compatibility of urban and rural services within the proposed borough. Number two, the compatibility of economic lifestyles and industrial or commercial activities. Number three, the existence throughout the proposed borough of customary and simple transportation and communication patterns. Number four, the extent and accommodation of spoken language differences throughout the proposed borough. Number five, the existence throughout the proposed borough of organized volunteer services such as fire departments or other emergency services. Subsection B was repealed, I believe, in 2008, and I'm sorry I don't have information on what that used to say, but needless to say, it won't be a standard that we will be using to evaluate this petition. Subsection C, the communications media and the land, water, and air transportation facilities throughout the proposed borough must allow for the level of communication and exchange necessary to develop an integrated borough government in accordance with Title 29 and Article 10 of the Constitution of the State of Alaska. In this regard, the Commission may consider relevant factors, including transportation schedules and costs, geographical and climatic impediments, telephonic and teleconferencing facilities, and electronic media for use by the public. Subsection D states that in determining whether communication and exchange patterns are sufficient, the Commission may consider whether all communities within a proposed borough are connected to the proposed borough seat by a public roadway, regularly scheduled airline flights on at least a weekly basis, regular ferry service on at least a weekly basis, charter flight services based in the proposed borough, other customary means of travel, including boats and snow machines, or sufficient electronic media communications. The Commission may also consider communication and exchange patterns will adequately facilitate interrelationships and integration of the people in the proposed borough. So I'll just pause there and see if there are any questions on any of the standards that I just listed on community of interest.
Those who are participating on Zoom, if you can raise your hand if you have a question, and if you're not able to do that, you can unmute, and then we'll acknowledge you. Okay, we have no questions in City Hall, and I don't see any hands raised.
Okay, great. I'll just keep rolling along here. Let me see if I can minimize this. Are you guys seeing that window of everyone on there? Okay, just want to make sure my screen is still showing. Okay. The next standard that will be used to evaluate this petition is the population. The population of a proposed borough must be sufficiently large and stable to support the proposed borough government in accordance with Title 29 and Article 10 of the Constitution. In this regard, the Commission may consider the following factors: census enumerations, durations of residency, historical population patterns, seasonal population changes, age distributions, contemporary and historical public school enrollment data, and non-confidential data from the Department of Revenue regarding PFD applications. In determining whether the population of a proposed borough is sufficiently large and stable to support proposed borough government, the Commission will presume that a minimum of 1,000 permanent residents is required unless specific and persuasive facts are presented showing that a lesser number is adequate. Any questions on population? Not seeing anyone raise their hand, so that's...
Oh, actually, I have a question. Oh. One of the questions that arose was whether how the populations are considered. Are they registered voters or everyone in the community?
Yeah, thank you for the question. For the purposes of evaluating this petition, it'll be all residents. It won't just be registered voters, but we'll look at all residents. Now, that gets a little bit tricky when we start to consider that there are probably some seasonal residents that come and go, but we'll be looking at permanent residents. And so that's why the Commission can consider various data points in making that determination, anything from permanent fund dividend applications to student enrollment and those types of factors. But we won't simply be looking at registered voters, because as we all know, that number can be it's a reliable number from the Division of Elections, but isn't the only factor. I mean, it would discount anyone under the age of 18, for example. Okay, the next standard to evaluate are resources, and that's 3AAC 110.055. So in accordance with Title 29, the economy of a proposed borough must include the human and financial resources to provide the development of essential municipal services on an efficient and cost-effective level. In this regard, the Commission will consider the reasonably anticipated functions of the proposed borough, the reasonably anticipated expenses of the proposed borough, the ability of the proposed borough to generate and collect revenue at the local level, the reasonably anticipated income of the proposed borough, the feasibility and plausibility of the anticipated operating and capital budgets of the proposed borough through the period extending one full fiscal year beyond the reasonably anticipated date. And I do want to just draw a attention to, first of all, I forgot to mention at the beginning of my presentation that all of the documents are included on the Local Boundary Commission's website, all of the petition documents. I believe they're also posted on the City of Hoonah's website, but I would really encourage you all to inform yourselves through the Local Boundary Commission's website. The documents that we have posted are the ones that have been accepted for filing and will not change. Those will be the documents that we'll be evaluating. It's possible that the City of Hoonah may change, and I actually heard that some of the links to their various documents are mislabeled. So we verified the links to all of the documents on the Local Boundary Commission page. Please refer to those. Part of their petition does include a proposed budget, and that should be listed. We took out just naming them Exhibit A, B, C, and D. We actually named those exhibits. So, you know, again, I just would encourage you to review those documents if you have a chance. Subsection F, the economic base of the area within the proposed borough. These are all things that the commission may consider or will consider, excuse me. The valuations of taxable property within the proposed borough. Land use within the proposed borough. Existing and reasonably anticipated industrial, commercial, and resource development for the proposed borough. And personal income of residents within the proposed borough. The commission may also consider relevant factors, including the need and availability of employable, skilled, and unskilled persons to serve the proposed borough, and the reasonably predictable level of commitment and interest of the population in sustaining a borough government. The next standard we'll use to evaluate will be boundaries. So in accordance with, looks like there's a question. Jamie has their hand raised.
Okay, go ahead, James. Oh, James, you may need to unmute.
Yeah.
We can't hear you. I think we should probably proceed and maybe pick him up later.
Sure. I did ask him to unmute, but that's okay. Let's keep moving here. Okay, so the boundaries of the proposed borough must conform generally to the natural geography. It must be on a regional scale suitable for borough government and must include all land and water necessary to provide the full development of essential municipal services on an efficient, cost-effective level. In this regard, the Commission may consider relevant factors, including... The land use and ownership patterns. The ethnicity and cultures. Existing and reasonably anticipated transportation patterns and facilities. Natural geographic features and environmental factors, an existing and reasonably anticipated industrial, commercial, and resource development within the proposed borough. When reviewing the boundaries proposed in a petition, the commission may also consider model borough boundaries for the area within the proposed borough, regional boundaries, including boundaries of one or more REAAs, federal census area boundaries, boundaries established for regional native corporations, and boundaries of national forests. The commission may also consider whether the proposed borough will embrace an area and population with common interests to the maximum degree possible, whether the proposed borough promotes maximum local self-government as determined in 3 AAC 110-981, whether the proposed borough promotes a minimum number of local government units, and whether the proposed borough boundaries are the optimum boundaries for that region in accordance with Article 10, Section 3 of the Alaska Constitution.
Did you want to have? Okay, Jed, we have a question from Mike.
Sure, go ahead.
Hello, Jed. Related to boundaries, I've been wondering whether the Huna borough boundaries can extend out to sea beyond the state's 3-mile limit. And if so, do they have any authority out there for such things as taxing commercially caught fish or ecotourism operations? I realize that the Yakutat borough drew its boundaries out there. I'm not sure whether that was an error in the Boundary Commission's allowing them to do that, but what can you say about whether the boundaries can go outside of the state and their authority out there? Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. That's a really good question, and certainly, an eyebrow-raising one. When we look at the Yakutat borough boundary and how far out to sea that goes, it does extend beyond the 3-mile offshore limit, which the state has jurisdiction, and then the federal waters extend, I believe, 12 miles into the exclusive economic zone. My understanding is that, if the borough levies a tax, it would not apply beyond that 3-mile limit. Why Yakutat's boundary was approved to extend, 12 miles or beyond. I don't remember offhand exactly how far out that goes, but why that was approved, I'm not really sure. There were a number of changes to that borough boundary from the original proposal. But that kind of extension out to sea really stuck. And I think that's probably why, at the risk of speculating, but, I'm sure that's why Huna also proposed a similar boundary, is that, they said, look, Yakutat got it, so we want it. And then I think they'll probably try to figure out what they can and can't do with that down the road. Right now there's nothing in their borough charter that says they intend to establish a any type of a landing tax or a borough fish tax. Just because it's not in their borough charter doesn't mean that borough charters can't be amended. And it does, again, the boundary as proposed is certainly raises questions of that nature. So I guess that's kind of a long-winded answer that maybe doesn't get you the answer you want, but my understanding from talking with the state assessor is that they'll have an argument to tax within their jurisdiction, and then I'm sure however that goes, is it's ultimately going to get litigated. Is that
That's helpful.
Okay. Okay. So I discussed these standards. So continuing with boundaries, absent a specific and persuasive showing to the contrary, the commission will presume that an area proposed for incorporation that is non-contiguous or that contains enclaves does not include all land and water necessary to allow for the full development of essential municipal services. The boundary as proposed technically is contiguous and does not contain enclaves. Again, the boundaries that they have proposed, you know, conspicuously leave out Gustavus, Tenneke Springs, and Pelican. It's, you know, I don't want to say that those are technically enclaves in the unorganized borough, because there are several other examples of where that occurs. But this is definitely, I think, a concern for LBC staff, and will be a point of much deliberation for the commission as to whether this is an appropriate boundary and how those communities are excluded, and whether this is the most appropriate boundary or not. Okay, subsection E on boundaries. If a petition for incorporation of a proposed borough describes an overlapping boundary, this basically goes on to say, if they propose to take another portion of another existing municipality, either a borough or a city, they would have to file a detachment. And they are not proposing to do that under this current petition. There was an earlier draft several years ago submitted to our office for review, not for consideration, but what we call informal technical review, where they were considering trying to detach a portion of the Haynes borough, but they have since withdrawn that idea and have proposed the boundaries that we see, which do not include any portion of any of the three municipalities that I had mentioned, or any of the adjacent boroughs, Sitka, Yakutat, or Haynes. Okay, the second to last standard used to evaluate this are whether this is in the best interests of the state. So in determining whether the incorporation of a borough is in the best interests of the state, the commission may consider these relevant factors. Does it promote maximum local self-government? Does it promote a minimum number of local government units? Will it relieve the state government of the responsibility of providing local services? And is it reasonably likely to expose state government to unusual and substantial risks as the prospective successor to the borough in the event of the borough's dissolution? And the final standard is one of applicability, and I'll just talk briefly. This is fairly straightforward. There are two options through which a petitioner may pursue a boundary change. The first option is the legislative review method, and that is provided in Article 10 of the Alaska Constitution. The legislative review method essentially says that a petition is submitted. If it is approved by the local boundary commission, the commission forwards it to the legislature in the first 10 days of a session. If the legislature does nothing within the first 45 days, the boundary change becomes effective. In order for the legislature to override the approval of a boundary change, it would require a majority vote of each house. So we've seen a few examples of that, but more commonly we see the legislature take no position and then a boundary change becomes effective. That is not the method that HUNA has pursued with this petition. HUNA is pursuing the local option method. And what that means is, if the petition is approved by the local boundary commission, it then goes to a vote of all residents within the proposed area. And that would require a majority vote of all residents in the proposed area. So that's the method that HUNA is pursuing. Any other questions on the standards right now? I realize it's a lot of words on the screen. There's a lot to it, but I'm hoping that you'll take these slides home and use them as a reference. I think that they're certainly helpful. But if you have any, I can take questions at the end too on any of this, but I'll just pause for a minute.
Okay, Jed, Kathy Leary has a question.
Hi. One of the bullets, number two, mentioned regional boundaries, including boundaries of one or more REAAs. So there wouldn't be one included in there because they've left out Angoon from the model borough boundary. So, and we're not in it. And so I'm just curious, is that a mandatory thing? Or it just suggests that it would take in an REAA or a part of an REAA?
Yeah, again, these are standards that the commission may consider. They're not obligated to consider. I can tell you as local boundary commission staff, and I'll go into process here in a few minutes, but in evaluating this petition, I'm certainly not going to neglect any of these standards, even though they're not a shall, they're a may and not a shall. I certainly think all of these standards are relevant to consider. HUNA proposed the boundaries that they proposed. They were not obligated to follow the model borough boundaries or capture more of the Chatham REAA. They're free to submit, whatever petition they want, but that doesn't mean that the commission should neglect any of these other relevant factors. And that, again, that goes back to, role of staff is to kind of raise questions about that. So Kathy, I don't know if that answers your question, but I can tell you definitively that, as many of these standards are going to be considered in evaluating this petition.
Okay, thanks.
More rather than fewer.
Oh, and Mike has another question on boundaries.
One of the standards, as you mentioned, is that the borough boundaries must be large enough to have all the resources that they need, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, to run their borough. What if they want boundaries that go way beyond that and include lands that are not essential or needed to support their borough? Is there an upper limit on that, or does the commission just have to accept extra land that they throw in there that is not really essential to their making their borough work?
Yeah, I could certainly appreciate the question, and I kind of see where you're going with that. Trying to answer it thoughtfully. I guess I'll just first say the commission doesn't have to accept any of this, provided that they, are deliberative and use the standards to evaluate the petition. A question that will arise through this is, who is going to have to justify the boundaries that they are proposing? They're going to have to justify why they need all of that area that they're proposing to incorporate, and how that's going to benefit the state, how that's going to benefit the community, and the responsibility that they'll have to provide services to that area. So all of that needs to be, fully documented in their petition. I can't really comment right now on the degree to which they have done that, because I haven't done my full evaluation of this petition. And again, I'll go into the steps of this process here in a minute. But I guess I'll just leave you with the thought that the commission doesn't simply just rubber stamp the boundaries that have been proposed. There needs to be a clear justification for why these boundaries are being proposed.
Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit about the procedures and the schedule here. And as you know, I mean, here's kind of a map of what we're looking at. The area in red is the area that they're proposing for incorporation. And as you can see, it's a little bit tough to kind of see the layer underneath, but as you can see that it does extend pretty far west offshore. So I mentioned that the petition itself was submitted back in June. We went through what's called the technical review period, where we made sure that they included enough information that is sufficient for commission review. That is a lower bar than actually evaluating the petition, but the technical review period just basically means, did they submit all of the necessary exhibits and requirements there? Did they include a budget? Did they include a, you know, model charter? Did they include a legal description of the boundaries? Did they include their brief? They also were required to submit signatures from voters both in the city and a number of voters from outside of the city, but in the proposed boundary. And so it did take them a little while to gather those signatures. But on Monday, November 27th, the petition was accepted for filing. And the first publication of the public notice ran on December 1st. And so that began the public comment period. The chair of the Local Boundary Commission extended the public comment period. It's required to be a minimum of 45 days, but the chair extended that to 90 days just due to the timing of this petition following around the holidays. So the last day for public comment will be on Thursday, February 29th at 5 p.m. On Monday.
I had a question.
Yep.
Yeah, can you go back to the map that you just had up? And it looks like that from the map that Gustavus is surrounded by the Haines Borough and would not be surrounded all the way by the Zuniboro. That doesn't look correct to me.
Okay, well, no, the way I'm looking at this map, I mean, the Hainesboro is kind of in that teal color, and so you're bordered to the east by the Hainesboro, and then to the south, west, and sort of north by the proposed Hunaboro.
Understanding that right now we're surrounded by the Park National Park. And so is this saying that Huna is not looking to get all the land around Gustavus, and Gustavus would gain more land? Or I don't understand the map.
Yeah, and apologies. This is kind of a tricky map to look at. If you go to the Local Boundary Commission website. I had our GIS folks put together a map that's a little bit more user-friendly. You can actually kind of zoom in on some of these areas in a little bit better detail and look at what the boundaries they're proposing. So yeah, I mean,
this map seems misleading and not accurate to me.
Well, I guess I'm not really sure how, but I mean, this isn't the only map that we're going to be using to evaluate this petition, and it does kind of provide a higher level overview. I guess to answer your question, Gustavus would not be gaining more land from this. Essentially, Hunaboro would be. Go ahead.
My understanding is that Gustavus would be surrounded on three sides, except for Icy Straits, by the new borough.
Well, yeah, that's essentially what this map is saying. As I mentioned, you know, it's that whole area in red, and so, you know, Gustavus is that white kind of donut hole in the middle. So you're got red to the south, west, and the north, and then teal.
I understand that. I don't think that they would go all the way to the Haynesboro. I don't think Gustavus would go all the way over to the Haynesboro.
Okay,
that's what the map shows.
That may be true. You know, again, like I said, if you want to refer to the, I'll even show you where that map is, just to give you an idea of what that looks like.
And we'll encourage Tom and anyone else that wants to come into City Hall and take a look at the maps that we have. We may be able to answer some of these questions.
Great.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem right to be providing a map that isn't accurate.
Well, again, you know, that's sort of a, for illustration purposes, I'm not trying to imply that, that, you know, that's a map that Huna proposed. We do have, as I said, a map on our page, and I'm trying to see if, can you guys see, is my PowerPoint still on, or do you see me navigating my website? I might need to switch my screen. Okay, I'm going to try switching my screen here. I'm going to show you guys, because I see what you're saying now. I just took a look at the map that we have on our website, and so I see what you're saying. So here, can you see that now? This is a different map.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a really useful web map. I would encourage you to take a look at this tool.
But I have looked at it, and it's different than the other one you provided.
Yeah, the one that I showed you, the one that was in color, is just, I mean, that was a map that they provided for illustration. It's certainly like not a level of detail that we're going to actually use for incorporating. I'm just kind of using that as a illustration. But yeah, this is the area you're kind of talking about that would be, I guess, kind of this maybe no man's land a little bit. There is kind of a little bit of... Well, I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Oh, here's the city limits. And so this area here is kind of unincorporated.
Yeah. Whose land is that?
I can't tell you what the land status of that is or who holds title to that land. I mean, we'll certainly be looking a little bit more into that. But yeah.
As far as I know, that's Park Service.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
And Micah.
So even that map is not.
Oh, Tom, could you pause for a minute and let Mike explain?
Would it be correct to say that Huna had to exclude the three communities from their borough, and they had to do it without leaving donut holes within their borough boundaries? So what they have done is created wedges, sort of, between the three communities. And in our case, the Haynesboro, and in the other two communities, there's a wedge between them and the Sitka borough, so that their boundaries are therefore drawn without having a donut hole or three donut holes within it. Is that a correct interpretation?
Yeah, I mean, I think if I'm understanding you correctly, they would not be allowed to. I mean, that's what this term enclaves means. They wouldn't be allowed to wholly surround those communities and exclude them. In other words, just like, you know, create a hole all on all sides around Tanaki or around Pelican or around Gustavus. They leave that, you know, there is part of those municipal boundaries of those cities that abut, you know, in the case of Pelican and Tanaki. Tanaki is kind of an interesting one because there is, again, like, that southern boundary isn't exactly conformed to the Sitka borough, but the boundary that Huna has proposed, just, it goes to the northern border of Tanaki. This area down here is like sort of disputed. The waterfront here, our GIS guy really doesn't like the way that that is kind of mapped out, but not really sure that that's totally relevant today, and it's a more complicated discussion than I think we need to get into right now, but it does kind of leave open, well, first of all, Huna didn't have to include these communities. It certainly could have included these communities, but what they had to do was not wholly surround them. So looking at this map, in other words, they couldn't have proposed their boundary go all the way down here, you know, around Pelican. This is the Sitka borough anyway, I believe. But they wouldn't have been able to sort of, you know, completely hem in the city of Pelican. They had to kind of leave that space a little bit vacant.
Okay,
otherwise, that would be an enclave. Much in the same way, and I got questions from Elfin Cove. Why couldn't Elfin Cove be excluded? And I think that's a little bit more obvious. It would have been, you know, they would have had to really draw a complete circle around the community of Elfin Cove to exclude them. And that would be the very definition of an enclave, which is expressly prohibited.
And I've seen two other people that may have an interest in asking questions whose hands have come up. Let's see, we had Gustavus had raised her hand, and then Jim Martell had asked to be unmuted. Do either of you folks wish to ask your question now? It looks like Gustavus is unmuted.
Yeah, that's Whitney Rapp. I was just going to say that I think their boundary suggests that we could either be annexed by the neighboring borough or by Huna at some point, but leaves us very little opportunities. So I think that's gets to Tom's question of why the wedges. It does not extend the city of Gustavus's boundary at this point, but it leaves us a connection to Haynes to be annexed by them at some point. Thanks. Okay.
Okay, Tom. Did you have another question?
It still is unclear what that land is to the north of Gustavus. Who would end up owning that?
The ownership would change. Yeah, the ownership wouldn't change. It would remain in, you know, whatever owner, but it would I guess it looks like it would remain in the unincorporated borough, as it were.
Well, my understanding is it's Park Service land.
Right. And that wouldn't change. That's not, we're not proposing any changes of ownership.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to get back to this presentation. Okay. Can you all, is that, are we back? Yeah. We're back on that one, I think. Okay, so I mentioned the public comment period ends on February 29th at 5 p.m. All of those comments will be collected by LBC staff. They will also be sent to the petitioner, to the city of Huna, and they'll have the ability to file a reply brief to that. Their reply brief will be due on April 1st, 2024. It's a Monday. No fooling. And then once that reply brief is in, we'll begin work on our preliminary report that will include a recommendation. It will be either to approve the petition, it will be to deny the petition, or it will be to modify the petition. I can't tell you what that recommendation will be right now. But the preliminary report will include kind of a deeper dive into how this petition as proposed addresses the standards, and we'll use those standards to evaluate it. Once the preliminary report has been released, it'll take approximately, you know, 7 to 8 weeks to draft that report. This May 20th deadline is kind of an approximate. But once it's released, the public will have 49 days to comment on that. So there will be a second opportunity for public comment. And then after that public comment period ends, staff will take an opportunity to revise the preliminary report into a final report with a recommendation. And then that will be released on or about August 5th. Presentation stuck. Okay. On Tuesday, September 10th, and this is still a tentative date, but there will be a public hearing. Why is this doing this for me? I don't want that. There will be a public hearing in Hoonah. That public hearing will be open to the public. We also plan to have teleconferencing abilities there, so anyone from the surrounding communities will be able to testify. At that public hearing, the hope is that the entire commission, but at least a quorum of the commission, will be present in Hoonah. They will get to tour as much of the area as possible, and they will be hearing from members of the public and the petitioner at that public hearing. After the public hearing, as soon as one day, but no more than 90 days afterward, the commission will hold a decisional meeting. And then once they have reached a decision on the petition, a written decision will be issued 30 days after the conclusion of that decisional meeting. If the petition is approved, then the decision will be mailed to all parties and respondents. There will be an 18-day period for the public to request reconsideration, and the LBC has 30 days on its own motion to reconsider the petition. If reconsideration is granted, then the petitioner or respondent has 10 days to file a brief. And here's a little bit about reconsideration. The commission will grant a request for reconsideration or, on its own motion, order reconsideration if they determine that a substantial procedural error occurred in the original proceeding, the original vote of the commission was based on fraud or misrepresentation, the commission failed to address a material issue of fact or controlling principle of law, or new evidence not available at the time of the hearing relating to a matter of significant public policy has become known. So, public comments. Right now, we are accepting written public comments. As was mentioned, we're not accepting oral comments. You can email, mail, or fax your comments into our office by 5 p.m. February 29th. Please send them to lbc@alaska.gov. That's Lima Bravo Charlie at alaska.gov. All of these comments will be read and they'll be considered by the LBC staff when writing the preliminary report, and they will also be considered by the LBC during their deliberation. As I mentioned, there will be a second public comment period after the preliminary report is released. Would encourage you to keep an eye out for that. If you want to best stay informed in this process, I would encourage you to sign up for our mailing list. You can do that through the LBC website. I'll show you how to do that here in a minute. But it's under the information tab. You have to sign up for it. I can't physically add you to it. It's kind of an opt-in thing. It sends you a confirmation email that you want to do it. So I would encourage you to sign up for our listserv. We do send out updates and will as this schedule potentially changes over time. None of these dates will be moved earlier, but they all may be extended. And then again, I mentioned oral testimony will be taken during a public hearing in Hoonah, tentatively scheduled for September 10th. You can submit more than one comment. And you can, as I mentioned, you can mail, email, or fax your comments. You aren't required to mail us a hard copy of the original if you fax it or email it. The commission had a regulation and suspended that one. And the LBC will make its decision based on whether it finds that this petition, as proposed, meets the constitutional, statutory, and regulatory standards. The comments that will be the most helpful to the commission and to staff and to you as a community are going to be the ones that factually state why the petition does or does not meet the standards. I mentioned to the folks in Elfin Cove the other day, this isn't a horse race of, you know, oh, 50 people commented that they are opposed to this petition. That's not helpful. The comments that are most helpful are the ones that substantively address these standards that I just discussed. So if you have any questions, here's my contact information. You can email lbc@alaska.gov. My personal email address is my name, jedediah.smith@alaska.gov. And then my phone number, 907-269-4559. Please go to the Local Boundary Commission website. Probably the fastest way is just to type in Alaska Local Boundary Commission into Google and let it take you there. But with that, I know there are probably some more questions, so I'm happy to try to address those. I'll stop sharing my screen too, if that's okay. I'll just leave this up for another second, but.
One question, it doesn't relate to the standards, but rather to once the borough is formed, but we have some members of our public who've been concerned about where HUNA would select their municipal entitlement lands for the borough. And the question is whether they can select lands that are outside of their borough boundaries. And if they can select only state lands or federal lands that are outside of their borough boundaries. Is that something that you can address, or do we need to ask DCCED of that one?
Well, you know, actually, the subject matter expert on municipal land entitlements is with the Department of Natural Resources. And actually, she gave a presentation on that process to the commission on Friday. And I'd be happy to, send her contact your way. But I think to really the point of your question is no, if this boundary change is approved, they wouldn't be able to select lands outside of their boundaries. That's my understanding of this, first of all. Second, could they select federal lands? That's a little bit more complicated of a process and would certainly require, negotiations between DNR and the federal agency that has title to those lands, and they'd have to arrange some kind of a land swap. My understanding is that none of that process begins to take place until the final boundary is approved. So it's, so much of that at this point is kind of speculation. I've already asked DNR whether they looked at, what sort of, I can't remember their term, it's VUU land, I think, is the term that they use. It's like basically vacant, unreserved, and unrestricted state lands. They've kind of taken a look at that, but they don't take their serious look at that until the boundary has been approved, simply because these boundaries could frankly change between now and the time that they're approved. So they're not going to do all of the work until they know what area they're actually looking at.
I guess a similar question that that came up was how much state land would the HUNA borough be entitled to select? I don't know whether the question is for acreage.
Yeah, it's 10%
of available DNR lands. I don't know what that applies to.
It is. It's you know, it's a tricky question. I think it's 10% of the proposed total acreage that they're looking at. And, you know, as you can imagine, the boundaries as proposed are quite substantial and significant. How much of that boundary, you know, is there in fact 10% VUU land within that boundary? I think that's a big question for sure. And I think it's worth raising that point. I don't think we have the answer to that. I don't know if we will have a definitive answer to that by the end of this process, but I still think it's worth raising the point.
And a follow-up question on that is, I tuned in for the LBC presentation, but we got wasn't able to hear. I'm not sure whether it was because we had a glitch. The explanation about the entitlement lands regarding water, tide water, and tide lands and wetlands. I was sent you that question, wondering if you could explain what is available lands under that 10% entitlement.
Yeah, again, I would kind of defer to DNR on that, but what I gleaned from that presentation is that kind of submerged tidelands are a kind of a separate. There's a separate process for that the borough would go through to select submerged tidelands, and they actually, it sounded to me like there's maybe a more rigorous process for reserving those. In other words, they can't just arbitrarily say we want all of this submerged tidelands. They actually have to have a use specified for that. That was kind of my takeaway, and I don't think that counted toward their actual municipal land entitlements, like that 10%. That was my understanding, but again, I would refer to DNR on that. That's a DNR process question.
Okay. And Rachel Patrick has a question.
Yes, you said that HUNA would have to be able to prove and provide municipal services for the entire area. Would that include emergency services for things like cruise ships on the water that would normally come to us up from Glacier Bay?
Well, yeah, just to thank you for that question. Just to clarify, they're not required to provide all services to the entire area, but they, in order to justify the boundaries that they've proposed, one of the things that they can discuss is how that is an appropriate boundary and whether they intend to provide those services to that area. I don't believe that they are proposing to provide emergency services to the entire boundary that they've proposed. But again, I need to kind of do a little bit deeper dive into their petition.
Okay. And we have two questions online. I'll ask callers to give their names. It looks like we have Lauren. I guess we'll give James an opportunity since we missed him the first round. James, could you identify yourself? And your mic is still muted. Can we unmute him? Okay.
I need to hand over the controls of this back to... Okay. I'm asking him to unmute, but I don't know if it sounds like it's on James. James, please unmute yourself and ask a question. We see your hand is raised.
Yeah.
Okay. I am unmuted. I didn't have a question. I don't know why my hand is raised.
Okay.
And it looks like Laura and Zach have a question.
Hi, good evening, and thank you so much for this presentation. I really appreciate it. My name is Laura Marcus. And I'm sorry if this is repeating a question that's already been asked. I heard Whitney say something about it a little while ago and missed the answer. But could you say a little bit about the annexation process, what that entails, and whether we as a city would have any legal recourse to resist an annexation attempt either by the Haines or HUNA boroughs if one should be made upon us.
Oh boy, that's it's a really great question, and maybe a topic for another night's entire presentation, because annexation is a whole different boundary change process. Some of those steps are similar to the one on incorporation. What I can tell you is that I did just go through an annexation petition with the city of Soldotna. It looked a lot different than what you are kind of, hypothesizing could happen. And it's certainly something that I've kind of personally thought about, looking at these boundary changes, or kind of, you know, what are all of the options and things we could speculate that could happen in the either near or distant future. You'd absolutely would have legal recourse, of course. That would be, something that you would all would need to consider if that were proposed down the road. Again, there are standards for annexations. A borough that is proposing to annex a city would need to address the standards are a little bit different than they are for incorporation. And there is one of the standards is need. And so they would need to demonstrate why they need the territory that they're proposing to annex and why the territory needs the borough. So that would just be a standard that the LBC would have to, you know, evaluate, a lens that they would have to look their proposal through. The other interesting thing about annexation is if they propose it through the local option method, in other words, if they propose, you know, whichever entity proposes this. And again, you know, this is all hypothetical, and I'm oftentimes reluctant to deal with hypotheticals, but since you asked, depending on the method that they pursue, they could pursue annexation through legislative review, meaning that if the commission approves it, it goes on to the legislature and there's no vote in the area. If they pursue it through local action, it would require a majority vote of both. And so this is the interesting thing about annexation, is that a local action would require majority vote of the existing municipality, as well as a majority vote of the territory proposed for annexation. And those are counted in two separate blocks. So if they go through local action method and it gets down to it and the city doesn't want it and the residents of the community vote no, then that's it. Like, it wouldn't become effective. So I guess that would be your first, you know, recourse right there. But it all depends on the method that they would pursue. A lot of ifs in that.
Hey, this is Jim Kearns now. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that, you guys. For some reason, my thing went on mute, so I was waving at you and I couldn't talk. But anyway, hey, my question is, if we, like the proposed is a 1% sales tax. And so if you have a charter boat, you live in Gustavus and you drive off the dock, you're in Icy Straits. Or if you drive up into the bay, you're in Glacier Bay. So you'd be inside the boundaries of that proposed borough. So you'd have to pay 1% sales tax to them. And then you pay a sales tax and you don't receive any. There's no benefit that this borough is providing for it, other than letting you come on the water. I'm not quite sure I understand. It almost feels like taxation without representation, kind of like an issue. So I'm just wondering about that, because that's the proposed thing that they would have. And I actually talked to the mayor in Hoonah, and he said, yeah, that would be what we would be trying to do. So you'd pay your 3% sales tax on your business here in Gustavus, and then you'd add the 1% sales tax for being in Icy Straits or Glacier Bay or Cross Sound or even out 5 miles out on the ocean. Is that correct?
You know, I can't comment on what the mayor told you in a conversation with him. I don't know yet whether they provided details of that's what they're intending to do with this petition. I think it's something that we're aware of and are going to try to look into, but I don't want to say one way or another definitively that that's possible. My conversation with the state assessor about whether they would be, whether that would be something permissible, he told me there's an argument to be made that they could do that.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
And I know there are lots of questions about how that would be enforced. I absolutely do not have the answers to those questions.
Expect to see the enforcement procedure spelled out in a petition?
I'm sorry?
Would you expect to have the petition describe how the enforcement of the tax obligation would be accomplished?
I guess it would just depend it would probably depend on a lot of things. It would probably depend on the amount of revenue they planned to generate and how much they depend on that revenue for the operation of their borough. But if it's, I'm not really sure how to answer that question. I think, we're going to be just trying to look for as much detail as possible, and anything that's lacking that we have questions of, we're going to try to raise those questions.
I don't see anybody in chambers, and I don't see any raised hands. I wanted to move into the issue of the PILT and forest receipts. We haven't been able to determine what the current acreage of entitlement land, both PILT and forest receipts, and the 10% DNR is in Gustavus. And the concerns are that we would lose eligibility for PILT and forest receipts. And we're wondering if you might be able, since we've requested this information from the state and federal PILT coordinators and the BLM as well, but we haven't gotten the answers. And do you have any suggestions about how we can pursue this line of inquiry?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's on our radar. I'm not the subject matter expert on this. My understanding is that the forest receipts, and I think to a degree the PILT stuff, because all of these communities are currently in the unorganized borough, they use the Huna Angoon census area to kind of, calculate that factor. The federal government loves to use counties to make these calculations. And of course, Alaska doesn't have counties. And we certainly don't have a borough in this area that would be considered the equivalent of a county. So they use the entire Huna Angoon census area. From there, how that calculation is broken down, I can't tell you. And I have tried to get a straight answer. I don't think that it's a simple, straightforward formula. So, as soon as I know more information, I'll try to pass that along. But I think at this point, your best bet is to do what we're doing, and that's to try to get that answer from the federal government and the agency that administers that. It's the Department of Interior that administers those payments. I don't have a name of a person at DOI, but we're probably going to the same place to try to get that answer.
Okay. And Kathy Leary has a question, but I wanted to ask a final question before her question, which is the financial impact on excluded communities a factor that the Boundary Commission would take into consideration?
Yeah, I think that really gets to the heart of whether, a petition not only is in the best interest of the locality, but in the best interest of the state as a whole. So, we're going to consider that impact for sure.
Thank you. And Kathy?
I guess it wasn't really a question, but I did contact Bureau of Land Management as the starting point for looking at the acreage boundaries under which the PILT and or forest receipts are determined. And they told me they just prepare a generic report and they send it. What I believe they told me was to the congressional areas that received this, and then from there it goes somewhere else. And I mean, it has to be appropriated, obviously, by Congress, but if the calculation has to do with acreage, then somehow it would have had to have been determined what that is. And I would think it would include a boundary. So I don't, I'm not saying you would have that information, but somebody ought to have it. And we haven't had any luck figuring that out. It can't be in a vacuum out there. It's got to be determined somehow. So I might have to call the congressional office to try to figure out where to go next. But.
Yeah, and again, I think that at some point in the process, the entire Huna-Angoon census area, which is kind of a defined boundary itself, plays a role in that.
Right, but then it's divvied up.
Right.
You know, and then the forest receipts also go to the school district, the Chatham School District.
Yeah.
So, you know, would that also change? Because they get their own separate pot out of those funds. And then the rest of us get it based on road mileage. So, you know.
I think I'm comfortable in saying that, yes, all of that distribution would likely change under this proposed boundary. To what degree, I can't tell you. But I think that it's probably safe to assume that it will change.
Okay, it sounds like Tom has a question.
I did have a question. I'm sorry, I don't know how to raise my hand. Maybe it's just by hitting the microphone button, I don't know. But my question is that a lot of this land is Park Service land and Forest Service land. And do they have a say in this?
Absolutely. They would be permitted to file a respondent brief. To, you know, what degree you can get a federal agency to comment on a matter like this, I don't know.
So you're saying that this borough could just take over Park Service land, Forest Service land?
No, again, what I'm saying is that the ownership of the land doesn't change. It's just the boundary, the jurisdiction of the borough extends into that land, but the ownership of the land doesn't change. The borough can't suddenly build a water slide on a national park just because it's in their boundary.
Why would they want it if they don't own it then?
I can't answer that. That's probably a question better, you know, left to look into the petition, and I haven't done my full analysis, and I'm not really here to answer for the city of Huna.
Would you explain time about what the VUU lands are?
I'm not the subject matter expert on that, so I'm not really comfortable going into a lot of detail on that. But, you know, basically it's state land that hasn't been designated for other uses, whether it's mental health trust land or whether it's mining land under patent or, you know, other types of designated uses. It's basically state land that has kind of unreserved at this point.
And what do the two U's stand for, unreserved and?
I mean, I think it's unreserved and unrestricted, but I'm not really sure.
This is Jim Kearns again. Just wondering, I noticed, you know, we have till like February, was it 29th or whatever it was for the 90 days. So to make a comment or, you know, anything, you know, have our say about it, who do we send that to? Do we send it to the Boundary Commission or do we send it to Huna?
Yep, you send it to the local Boundary Commission. That email was on the last slide. It's LBC. Local Boundary Commission, lbc@alaska.gov.
Okay.
Golf Oscar Victor.
And
perfect.
I sent it out in a news blast as well. I took a screenshot of that slide so everybody has the information.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Kathy, go ahead.
Is there a difference between an enclave and a donut hole? I'm just asking because somebody emailed me who was familiar with Boundary Commission previously and had a comment that was, while the wedges have been created to provide an illusion of no donut holes, the reality is that three isolated communities will be created. And so I've heard us use enclave and donut hole, and I was just wondering if there was any kind of a difference.
No, I mean, I think the donut hole is a sort of a more colloquial term. For the sake of LBC regulations and the way that's defined, there is not any enclaves created by the boundaries within the boundaries that they've proposed. So the only enclave in the entire state, and, you know, of course, there's going to be an exception to every rule, but the only enclave that exists in the entire state is, in fact, in the Haines Borough, and that's the community of Clukwan, which is an enclave in that borough. And Clukwan operates a school in the Chatham School District. They're not in the Haynesboro School District. I can't comment to you on what degree any other borough services are provided in Clukwan, but I would imagine probably not many, if any. But yeah, there is kind of that one enclave within the Haynesboro. And why that was approved, how it was approved, I'm not really... it's a little bit head scratching. I understand it's there were some cultural elements that probably played a role in that. Clukwan is, kind of a culturally unique community within that borough, but it still sort of defies that rule. But what we're talking about with the three municipalities mentioned here, they're not enclaves within the proposed Hoona borough. They end up becoming enclaves kind of in the unorganized borough, as it were. And there are other examples of that. This would certainly be a more dramatic example of that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, well, you know, I appreciate the questions, and I would love to stick around all night and answer them for you. I'm getting a little bit of a side eye from my wife. We have another commitment to attend to this evening, so I'm going to be on my way. But I would be happy to respond to questions. If there are any more, you're more than welcome to call my office or send an email to me, and I'll do my best to try to respond to those. Again, happy to respond to process questions. I really can't comment as to the substance or the motives of the petitioner, but happy to answer any technical questions. But really appreciate everyone's time this evening.
We appreciate your spending time with us and being on the hot seat.
I'm not the one that's in the hot seat, but not yet, at least. Wait until that preliminary report comes out, then I'll be in the hot seat.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm going to bail from this meeting, but hopefully I'm not the moderator now, and I don't shut you all down. But thank you for your time, and please be in touch.